Professor Siddiqui, Mr. Professor Rashid, Mr. Siddiqui, Professor Grierson, and Mr. Akbar. I'm delighted to be here at the Ahmad Jamal Kidwai Memorial Lecture. I'd heard a great deal about Jamal Saab, but I never had the pleasure of meeting him. But it's obvious that he has done enormous work, and Jamia Millia's Mass Communication Institute is one of the finest in the country, and I think much of the credit should go to him. Friends, I feel a bit of an imposter standing in front of you and trying to give you an expert's view of the social media, because I myself know very little about the social media. From 1974, when I entered journalism, I have stayed with the print media. I have not even gone to television. I am a guest sometimes on television programs, but I have declined all invitations to become an anchor or to host programs because my love affair with the print media is not yet over. So I will give you, but inevitably it's impossible not to confront social media, not to try and understand it, not to see the impact it's having, and not to see whether it's a curse or a boon. So if you think you're getting some expert on the subject, I just wanted to warn you that you're not. You're getting a very layman's view on the social media. And I don't use the social media. My wife is on Facebook and all this. And I don't Twitter. I have enough problems in life, so I stick with those. But I am, as I said, constantly being made aware of social media and its powers. Now the subject that I am supposed to address is whether it's a curse or a boon. And I would say that it's both. That it's both a curse and both a boon. Now you might ask, is it more of a curse and less of a boon, or more of a boon and less of a curse? And I would say it's more of a boon and less than a curse. It's a boon, but it's also a curse, and it's like a ticking time bomb. We have to know how to handle it. Now, if you ask me what is the single most important attribute of the social media and how has it changed the dynamics of society, I would say that its single biggest attribute is the audience that it has captured. People like you. The social media, I have no figures, I've done no survey, but my suspicion is that overwhelmingly social media is used by young people. People in the age group of 18, 20, 22, 30. And this was a community of people which is very large. We are told that 60% of India is under 30 years of age. Now, this community of young people, urban, semi-urban, had been, before social media became so important, had been somewhat disengaged from the problems of the country. They had said, or they claimed, that conventional politics as it is presented to them is of very little interest to them. And this very important community of young people had become aliens in their own country. And we had a situation which was very alarming, where young people in this country found no ways to express themselves, and they found no, and what they, the narrative, the discourse that they would see through newspapers, television, etc., did not engage them or interest them. This kind of recrimination, name-calling, hard party politics. It's not just party politics, but hard party politics. I was, many years ago, having dinner with Rupert Murdoch, about 10, 11 years ago, the great media magnate. And among other things, someone asked him what he thought of Indian newspapers. And he said that they were professional, etc., etc. But he said he didn't understand why there was so much politics in this country. It was full of politics and party politics. Who is in, who is out, when is the AICC going to be refurbished, what is Rahul Gandhi going to do. Today I read an extraordinary story. There must be some genius who wrote it. Said that the Congress is very worried about corruption. And this, it's got a 500 or 600 word analysis, which is so completely banal and predictable and obvious that you are not surprised that people don't want to read this kind of thing. And so what you have in the national discourse is what it would seem from the outside to be a very spirited discourse, to be one where ideas are discussed, where people have polarized views. But half the nation is sleeping. Or 60% of the nation is sleeping. They are not interested in this. It's not that they are not interested in the issue. They are not interested in the way the issue is framed for them. And no one has tried to do this. No one has tried to reframe it. Simultaneously, in the last 10 years, I find that people are saying, oh, these young people, they are very trivial. They are these page 3 people. They only want to read about parties and discourse. And that's why you have all these page 3 pictures, so that they are not interested in the national discourse, which is completely false. Although I don't think there's anything wrong in going to discourse and parties and having a good time. I mean, there's no inconsistency. But to say that young people are only interested in this exclusively is rubbish, absolutely. But you couldn't blame them, because they were pushed into this corner of what they saw and read was of no interest to them. Now, social media, what has it done? In all its, all the elements of social media, what have they done? I think they have empowered the youth. They have given youth a power. And this is not collective power. This is individual power. One person's power, who can sit in front of his computer and say anything, anything that comes into his mind. Sometimes what he says is maybe a little bit dangerous, as somebody was suggesting. But I'd much rather have more people ventilate their ideas than keep everything repressed and inside. And it has empowered them through the power of one and given them an opportunity to express their views. Now, I will give you one extraordinary example of the power of social media and the engagement of youth with that social media. A couple of months ago in Delhi, we had this most horrible rape, gang rape case. And people thought, well, gang rapes, 24 hours, it will be over. People get, the outrage will be there, and we have a 24-hour outrage and it'll be over. But it wasn't over. It went on day after day after day after day. And it was sustained largely by the social media. It was the social media which informed most of the young people who were there what was the agenda. But more important, it gave them an opportunity for conversation. They were able to exchange views and say what they felt about what had happened to this girl. And many of those people said that we just can't protest for one day or 2 days and just let this fade away. And therefore, Indian politics was faced with a situation which in my lifetime I don't remember. It is that we had a series of protests in which the political class did not know what to do. They were completely bewildered and flabbergasted, and they all locked themselves up in their bungalows, Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi. No one came out. And all these people were harrowing them, taunting them. But nobody came out. The only person who came out was shouted, and she, the Chief Minister of Delhi, had to go back. So the political class in India has a very good system of breaking up a protest. They will buy somebody, they will gift somebody something, they will put a tax raid on somebody's father or uncle. In the case of Mr. Kejriwal and Anna Hazare, they gave a lot of laptops to Anna Hazare's people in their village. So they are very good at breaking down this thing. And they broke that. They broke that agitation into two. Couldn't break this agitation. But there was nothing to break. It was a leaderless agitation. There was no leader. There was no agenda. There was no huge charter of demands. There was just outrage and anger at why this sort of thing continues to happen and why women in India are not even second-class citizens but third-class citizens. So then another interesting thing happened, which I perhaps has not been mentioned so much. What has been mentioned is the fact that Justice J.S. Verma, etc., were able to produce the report in 29 days in a country where it can take years and years to do this thing. But these people who were protesting, young people, said that their protest will only end when they are given concrete guarantees that something is to be done. As opposed to, yes, yes, the accession of parliament is coming, we will pass this bill, we will pass that bill, you can be sure that we, Sonia Gandhi saying that, of course, women are like Sita in this country, etc., it's all that rubbish. And these people didn't fall for it. And this, all this conversation is going on in the social media, through Facebook and Twitter and all these other places. That don't fall for the, don't, let's not get into this trap. Let's not get into the reassurance trap that we assure you that this will happen, this, they said no. And they got, for the first time in this country, the speed and urgency with which they got corrective action, I think can almost go into the Guinness Book of Records. That you, while Parliament is starting on 21st, their protest forced the government to come out with an ordinance. So, this is the power. And this is a power which is going to grow. Whether you like it or not, we can do nothing about it. It's going to grow as technology grows. And this is a power which has overturned governments. from Tunisia to Egypt, to all sorts of places. And when we had the Anna Hazare movement, that again was sustained largely, and Kejriwal's thing, by the social media. And young people were out there. I myself had the opportunity to, on one particular day, to release Kejriwal's book from the podium. And you know, I was sitting there with all these Hazare and Kiran Bedi. It's an absolutely dizzying sight. It can make you go mad with power because you're sitting over there. And hundreds, not hundreds of thousands, but certainly 10, 12,000 people, poor people, rich people, children, young people, waving flags, people who have not, who are on haven't eaten for days, people who come from various parts of the country. To see these people protest like that is really inspiring and frightening, that this is the power of people when they get together. You know, in China, they are so scared of these things that there was a, I forget the name in China, Falun Gong or something like that. And they were crazies like Rajneesh kind of people. So they used to meet in like some park or something. Like Lodhi Ghat, there was some park in Beijing they used to meet. 5 people became 10, 10 people became 20, 20 became 30, 30 became 100. And some branches started in other cities. And the Chinese thought there's a revolution is on. And they disbanded those people. So if the power of 100 people together can be so frightening for a government, what do you think will be the power of thousands, 10,000 people, especially the young people? One of the things that I find, and I'm not sure whether, I have no evidence for this, the government is not scared of people who are over 45, 50, 55, 60. They think these are has-beens and they are not the new generation. They are very scared of young people. And they are all the time looking for leaders who can communicate with these young people. If you notice in the Congress, they hundred all the time they say, where is your youth brigade? Where is your youth brigade? And they want Rahul Gandhi and Sindhia and all these people to be able to talk and to present the youth brigade. But I think that they understand correctly that not only demographically in numbers, but the agenda and the vision and their aspirations are going to determine the future of this country and the future of governments. So I think young people may not have realized this, their own power, and in terms of what the government says. And this new social media, I think, has given young people for the first time some intimation of the power they have in their hand. It has given them some inkling, some idea. And I think this gang rape agitation must have inspired people that yes, they can. Now I'll talk a little bit about the curse. Well, having talked about the boon, I'll talk a little bit about the curse. Now, one of the major problems with social media is that it's completely unregulated. You see, in the print media, we have the press council, and you can sue me for defamation. I have got about half a dozen cases at this moment, defamation cases, people will sue me. That's all right, that's part of the job. But you can do that. If you are in television, you have the National Broadcasting Association, and you have one more body. National Broadcasting Association is Justice J.S. Verma, and somebody else, Reed Dressel, you can take complaints over there. Who do you complain to in Facebook or Twitter? So the media is, it's a free-for-all. And in that free-for-all, people can say the most venomous things. People can say the most vicious things and get away with it. You know, there was a case in Britain recently where some homosexuality case was there, some big people were involved. So one person was going to be named Lord McAlpine. He's very big and he had a reputation for pedophilia. He was going to get named in the press, but somehow he got an injunction, etc., and from the courts, and that not only was the story killed, but nothing happened. But that didn't matter. It was all over the social media. His name, his background, everything was there. It turned out in the end that information was wrong. That Lord McAlpine was not a pedophilic. They got the name wrong, somebody else was. But that chap's reputation was reduced on the social media. You couldn't use it on television or print because there were controlling mechanisms over there. But it was used in the social media. And he's now suing. It'd be very interesting to see that some of the people who Twitter in Britain are some of the most important people, editors of The Guardian, lords in the House of Lords, members of Parliament, they all Twitter. And they were all twittering his name because one heard from the other, and it was a kind of domino effect. It just, everybody started saying, is it true that Lord McAlpine is it? You could put a question mark. But does it alter the thing that you have named him? Some people didn't even put the question mark. They were having a little conversation. He is a somewhat fat person. And they think that all fat people are homosexuals. But all this kind of thing is going on, and at the moment there are cases in court, and be very interesting to see what happens to those cases, and if those cases are entertained, the court can throw them out and say they have no mandate to look at this kind of thing. So it is free speech, absolutely free, and I think most people who, while someone like me supports the social media, has got huge problems with the fact that there is no controlling, there is no mechanism, there is no structure, there is no institutionalized fora where you can go and complain and get redressal like you can get in the print or television. So this is one aspect, and we have a further problem here. I don't know whether you remember, but about 8-9 months ago, I think, Mr. Kapil Sibal tried to regulate the social media. Yeah. And there was an outcry in this country. I have never seen this kind of thing. And the outcry was from the young people, most of them. And they said, we won't let this happen. Of course, Mr. Sibal made his case worse because all the examples that he gave were people who were making fun of Manmohan Singh and Sonia Gandhi, so there was nothing wrong with that. But people are asking that supposing you say something about the Quran, you say something about the Prophet, or you say something about something which is very somebody's faith, which has been done, by the way. So what happens? You let it go in the name of free speech? You see, there is one notion, Salman Rushdie comes up with this frequently, that in a free society, the right to offend is integral to that free society. That my right to offend, my right to write against the Quran or the Prophet, it's my right. You don't like it, you don't read my book. That's the issue. Or the Danish cartoons in Denmark. If you don't like the cartoons, don't see the cartoons, etc. So my right to offend is part of my right of free speech. And if you take away that right, then you kill literature, journalism, everything, because we are all in the business, whether we like it or not, of offending. It's true to a certain extent that if you have a newspaper which doesn't offend anybody, nobody will buy it. If you have a TV channel which doesn't offend anybody, I think Times Now will close down. So, but even in the right to offend, this is my own view, that there is a Lakshman Rekha. You can't offend with impunity. Just like there are reasonable restrictions to free speech. If we say there are no restrictions, then how do we put Mr. Owesi in prison? How do we put Mr. Togadia in prison? How do we launch a case against Varun Gandhi? That's free speech. But free speech in our constitution comes with certain reasonable restrictions. Similarly, the right to offend, which is a very important right, and I think that in any free society you must be able to offend people. But there is a line beyond which you cannot go. Now, the difficulty arises that this line is very subjective. Who decides where this line is? Do we decide the crazy people in Chennai who stopped Kamala Hassan's film? That kind of misuse gives a bad name to the really serious things like Salman Rushdie's book, which are much more serious. And then you say, and the people who defend Salman Rushdie, right to offend, then give examples of these things, of this film here and there, and saying India is becoming an intolerant society, etc., etc. So we must have the right to offend. So the right to offend cannot be absolute. And on our in the social media, there is no control of this thing. And how do you do it? But the question is, how do you do it? I think all reasonable, sane people would agree that it needs to be done, but how do you do it? That's the question. And the first thing you must say is you have to keep the politicians out. And you cannot give politicians, you can't have a body of politicians who's going to decide what is offensive material on social media and what is not offensive material. So that is a non-starter. But I think all of us who support the social media and who want it protected and strengthened can surely come up with a mechanism, with a body, with a structure which independently examines the material and comes to some conclusion about whether it should be there or not. Now, if you don't like that, then come up with something else. But the point remains that you cannot have a laissez-faire, as I say. You cannot have free market capitalism kind of thing, that everything goes. At the moment, young people, unfortunately, are so intoxicated with the power of the social media that they are saying, no, everything must go. Don't try and stop anything. I think young people must also, the youth of this country, must also deliberate on this question, that it is in the interests of their own power and their own use of the free social media that there should be some control on it, very light control. I'm not talking of heavy-handed control, I'm talking of very light control. Where I think especially in matters of faith, that somebody can examine that material. I would much rather trust the judgment of, or the opinion of some judges, some eminent journalists, retired judges, 4 or 5 body, and ask them, and give them a time frame. The other thing is that if you're going to take 5 months to do it, then it's finished. So within 24 hours or 48 hours, or whatever it is, material must be examined, like a censor board. But even the censor board has got some links with the government. The government should have nothing to do with this. But I think we need a free for all. We can't allow this free for all. Now, I'll just end by saying that even if you hate the social media, you can do nothing about it. It is a power which is going to grow. So I think I as an editor of a newspaper or a magazine, would love to close down the social media, because they have closed down so many of my papers. The print media is under severe attack. Television is under severe attack. Because these people, as soon as news breaks, it's there. Not only is it there, you've got 50... They are even faster than breaking news on television. So it's... And it's completely undigested, unregulated, nobody... I mean, sometimes even on television, you see the guy from the ground, say from Jamia Millia, and to the studio, and he's broadcasting, and it going straight on the screen. He can say anything, especially in times of riots, and all this becomes very dangerous. Whereas in the print media, when the reporter does a story, riot, whatever it is, there are at least six screenings before it reaches, before it is set for print. Including the last one, if it is important, the editor himself looks at it. Otherwise, the chief of bureau, the chief sub-editor, it's got five or six people who look at the story. If they think it's weak or strong, whatever it is, they call the reporter back, they rework it, and they put it into some final shape. Then you see it. But in television, this doesn't happen. And in social media, there's no question about this. So I think because you have this power and you can say anything on that, and lots of things have been said on this. You see, I'll tell you one thing. Mr. Rushdie boasts that what are these people in India protesting about my book? It's available on the net. Satanic verses, you can read the whole satanic verses on the net. So it makes a nonsense of the ban in India. Now, once if you have these sort of problems, then I think it's nonsensical for the Indian government to ban it and say it cannot be sold, and for somebody can just click onto it and get the whole book and then download the book actually. So I think we have great power. This media, the social media is something which is, at least in my imagination, I am still in the process of trying to comprehend it. I don't understand it. I don't understand its power completely. I don't understand its scale. I don't understand its horizon. I don't understand where it will take us. But I only understand one thing, that it's there. And it's not going to go away. Thank you very much.